Here at Strange Magic, Amanda and I talk about our views on tarot and the ways in which we practice magic.
And we understand that other people have different ways of practicing and different interpretations of the tarot, and that's totally okay.
Take what you'd like and leave the rest.
Welcome to Strange Magic, a podcast about tarot, about magic, about intuition, about feminism, about culture, about
Beyonce,
about down with capitalism, if that's a thing.
We can make it one.
We're making it one. I'm Amanda Yates Garcia.
I'm Sarah Faith Gottesdiener.
And today we will be talking about the Empress. The sexy, juicy, magnificent fertility queen of the tarot deck.
We love this card. How could you not love this card? I don't want to speak for everyone listening. I know people have problems with the particular cards, but I just got to say this card, the Empress, such a great card. The Empress is the queen of queens. Like the High Priestess before her, she sits, but her throne is in nature. It's actually a pretty plush red couch, right? With pillows, and it's daytime. She's Mother Earth. She's Venus. She's love, creation, sex, generative processes. I see her as an open rose, one who's been pollinated and one who is activated by pollination. She's pleasure, the pursuit of pleasure. She's the integration of all the cards before her. So she's ego, intuition, personal power, and surrender all wrapped up.
Yes, bingo. I love the version of her in the Mother Piece deck, where she's this voluptuous, juicy woman reclining naked. She's got a leopard skin draped over her. She's out there in the middle of a field. There's a forest in the background. You feel like the field is fertile and full of flowers around her. She's got a rose. Yeah, there's lions. Bull. Mm-hmm. She's just this sexy, beautiful, fertile thing. So I see the Empress as this bridleless, boundless nature, right? So she is the jungles of the Amazon. Literally, she is that energy, teeming with life everywhere. Everywhere you look, there's vines and insects and river dolphins and parrots and panthers. She's just juice. She's just life force. She's pure Eros. She's ruled by Venus. She's the force that connects things, that brings things together. She is magnetism, right? So she draws things towards her. She entices. Mm-hmm. And she is shameless erotic pleasure. She knows no shame. Don't even try to give it to her. She is not ashamed. She's not even she refuses to be ashamed. She's just what are you talking about?
It doesn't exist.
Yeah, it's not in her vocabulary. In her world. Her knowledge comes through the body, through her senses. She's sometimes referred to as the whore of Babylon, but obviously that's, a problematic term. But she can reclaim that term because she takes all comers, right? She denies no one. She is boundless love, an open embrace. She feeds us. She clothes us. She loves us. She makes love to us. She is everything we need.
And more. A lot of times we use pronouns in conjunction with tarot cards, the archetypes. And I just want to point out here that tarot cards are genderless. We're using pronouns, we're using she or they or him in conjunction with certain tarot cards, because those in general are the attributes of the quality of the life force that has been prescribed to a certain card. So while we're going to be saying she with the Empress, I think what we're really talking about is a generative feminine energy, a wildness, a beauty, a value of beauty and of joy and of love, an excitement that we just are using a she pronoun, but it can be a man, it can be a baby, it can be an old person, it can be genderless, it
Absolutely.
Can be, I just want to put that out there because we'll be using pronouns a lot, obviously, and archetypes are not gender specific that we're going to be talking about, especially because I sort of want to talk about a couple of drag queens and gender queer archetypes with this card that really fall in really nicely as we make our way through. That being said, I can't not talk about the archetype of mother with this card.
Sure.
We have the magician, which is self, I, numero uno. We have the high priestess, which is subconscious, the other, the void, you know, development of the subconscious and of our own intuition and magic. And now we're met with mother. We're met with a nurturing figure. We're met with self-parenting in a way. We're met with that sort of stage of development when we come into contact with our mother as being separate from us and thinking about how we're a part of her or how we're different than her and how we kind of relate to her as well.
Yeah, totally. The high priestess, which we talked about last week, you know, is that virgin. She's sort of an entity unto herself and she's encountering the other. But her process is very different from the empress because the empress is no longer the child. She is not the virgin goddess like Diana or Artemis, the goddess of the hunt. She is mother. She is lover. She is a fully grown woman. I love what you were saying, though, about the gender pronouns, because yes, we're looking at this through the lens of language. That's really the only way that we have to talk about this stuff. And so we are using gendered pronouns because that's the way that we approach this in our language. But of course, like when we say jungle, a jungle is not a woman, but we're using some poetics here. The Empress is that creative force and she's fertility. She's boundless creative energy. So let's talk pop culture because I feel like that's a really great point of entry.
Yeah,
like,
it's a great point of entry.
Who is she in the world around us?
I kind of want to think first when we're talking about pop culture or like present day ideas around philosophies that the Empress could interact with and sort of float in, as I want to think about the really, really famous work of Audre Lorde, the poet, the scholar, the writer, the activist, and, you know, one of the titles of one of her works, which are Uses of the Erotic, right? This idea that eroticism is powerful, our desire is really potent, and it's also meaningful. It's powerful, it's useful, it should not be undervalued. And I think that, you know, we're going to bounce over to magic and uses of the erotic and desire in magic, which I think the Empress for me really strongly resonates with, because for me, the Empress is about co-creation and manifestation born out of love and desire and pleasure, you know, and excitement and fecundity and a wildness or a virility, whatever you want to ascribe it to. But I'm just going to very quickly quote Audre Lorde, very famous Audre Lorde quote that I think slides right into the Empress and all that she stands for. And that is, caring for myself is not self-indulgence. It is self-preservation, and that is an act of political warfare.
Woot, woot. I love that. And I also think of The Charge of the Star Goddess, which is one of the main texts in witchcraft. There's a line in it that says, "For behold, all acts of love and pleasure are my rituals," and it's speaking as the star goddess. So that's an empress idiom, if ever there was one. All acts of love and pleasure are her rituals. And I think building on this idea of eros as like being a really fundamental aspect of magic is really important, right? Because in the scientific worldview, is all about division, distinction, classification, separation, quantification, right? So we name a thing, we say, this is this separate thing, and then we can measure how much of it there is, and we can quantify it. And it's really about distinguishing and classifying. Like that's the process of the scientific method. The practice of the Empress, the practice of magic, is about connection. It's not about making distinctions as much as it is drawing parodies between things. There's a form of sympathetic magic that's going on there that is all about saying this thing relates to the other thing. So it's relational. It's not about just saying, oh, well, in this forest, there are cypress and there are spruce and there are pine. And how many of each are there, right? So that we can chop them down and use them to make different kinds of paper. Instead, it's about noticing the connection of the forest. It's about noticing how all those things are working together and working in harmony and creating this magic and this life force. Carolyn, our producer, was mentioning Beyonce as an embodiment of the Empress. What do you think about that?
I think, hell yes, 100%. How could you not? I mean, all forms of Beyonce, especially as we most recently saw her in a couple of ways. One, pregnant Beyonce.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, right? So she's pregnant. she's powerful and she's sexy simultaneously, right? So there's no division between like the mother whore there. I mean, sorry, I don't, you know, like place whore and Beyonce in the same sentence, but
the dichotomy.
Yes,
the,
exactly. Like she, it, that doesn't apply.
Yes, the yes. That's it's all like it's all kind
no
of
shame,
everything.
Right. Shameless, refusing to accept.
Totally, totally, totally powerful. And then I think I also want to sort of make this, I guess I'm going to like hit us over the head with this idea of...
Sorry
if you're hearing dog scratching, but that is very Empress because my dog right now is joyfully scratching themselves with full abandon. But pleasure for pleasure's sake in our society is so judged. You know, we think about how people think about sex workers, how people think about performative femininity, drag queens. Sometimes there can be judgments of greed or excessiveness for someone who wants to look really nice or enjoy good food or not do much, you know, because we all have those cycles, right? And we can talk about that too, but, you know, the Empress resides in a cycle of sort of harvest and enjoyment, harvest and pleasure, generation, like generative, giving birth, and then kind of reaping, and that in itself being sort of its own pleasure loop, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Empress's drag queen is an absolute yes, right? Because there is no too much. You can keep going further, amplify, put more glitter, put more lipstick, like lift the tits higher, do all of that. There is no idea of too much in too muchness in the Empress. Like she is just boundless. But I also love in the Beyonce thing, the idea of like, but she's also like a provider. Beyonce is like, I'll take you to Red Lobster. And it's like, yeah, she has everything you need.
She's also a giver. She's a disseminator and a giver, and pleasure is her weapon. So, you know, I just think about her recent performances at Coachella, where she's really presenting African-American culture on a wider audience, and pleasure and mastery and beauty and enjoyment is her tool. And that in itself is providing the masses, you know, with a window into African-American culture, you know, as well as providing enjoyment, as well as providing comfort, you know, to so many Black people who don't often see their culture mirrored kind of at that level to the masses. So I also think it's an important thing to talk about value of pleasure, like how pleasure for pleasure's sake can also become a ripple out into kind of the collective.
So let's talk about this mother, whore, virgin mother stereotypes. I'm thinking about like Angelina Jolie, who is over the top sexy, right? She's like busty and she's got the big lips and the big eyes and the big hair. And she's also like mother to the world, right? Like she's got a whole gaggle of children. She's like involved in all these UN initiatives to protect the children of the world. She's an activist. But I feel like she does also have some of that high priestess in there. And when we're talking about sex workers and trauma and things like that, like that's not something that I really associate with the Empress. So I feel like those two can kind of get folded together. If sex work was not traumatizing in our culture, if it was really just about the celebration of pleasure, which it would be in its ideal form, I think, then I would see that as like a pure empress. But unfortunately, if it was like sacred prostitutes of like antiquity, I would see it like that. What do you think of that?
I think sex workers are synonymous with the empress. Again, like the semantics parsing out the way our culture views sex work isn't very empressy in quotes, but I believe that they are because they're the disseminators of pleasure.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I see it differently. I don't know. I worked in the sex industry for 7 years and I didn't see it all as like dissemination of pleasure. There was seriously a lot of trauma involved in that for me. So I feel like if I were to do it now, which I wouldn't, but if I were to, I would have so much more skill to be able to work as like a disseminator of pleasure and a healer in that way. But I feel like a lot of the time, you know, people who are involved in the sex industry, I'm not saying this about everyone in the sex industry, of course, but I mean, I think we're very young often when you get start to get involved in the sex industry, and For me, I certainly wasn't equipped to deal with all of the id and taboo and trouble that goes along with people's orientation towards sex and towards women and towards all of that stuff. So to me, I see the Empress as a pure vehicle of pleasure. And I don't associate her with trauma in the same way that I do with the High Priestess. But I do respect your opinion and position.
Why don't you talk to us about a couple other archetypes you had for her? The domestic goddess.
Oh, yeah. The domestic goddess, right? Do you guys all know Nigella Lawson? I mean, I learned about that when living in England. Domestic goddess is like this woman who like walks around barefoot in her like sumptuous silks and satins, and she's
very comfortable.
She's very elastic waistband. Well, I wouldn't say elastic waistband because it's also very beautiful, right? And she's like making banquets of food and like has fresh cut melons on the table, and she makes her house into this palace of luxury. And, you know, she's got music playing and everybody comes over and feasts and delights. And it's just, she is a power figure of the domestic world shamelessly. So she's not being like, oh, should I choose career or should I choose being a mother, right? Like, it's just beyond that for the domestic goddess. But of course, that's very much a function of class. Like, I mean, a lot of people, I'm sure, would be like, yeah, I want to choose to be a domestic goddess, but I have to go work my three jobs and deal with my taxes and my health insurance and my loan payments and my children, whatever. So
you had a couple other deities there.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Also wanted to mention, especially speaking to Beyonce, as we were before, Yemanja Oshun, right? So we see that motif of those Yoruban deities coming up in Beyonce, right? Yemanja being the goddess of the sea, right? And she's normally dressed in white. And she's kind of a mother goddess, but also very like central and beautiful. And then there's Oshun, who is a river goddess, and she's like the goddess of beauty and sexuality. And sometimes they sort of get converged, although I guess in theory you're not supposed to invoke them at the same time. But I mean, I'm not an expert in either of those goddesses, but I know that Beyonce does use and evoke those entities and deities in her work as it speaks to Afro-Caribbean traditions.
Totally. I have a couple archetypes that I'll quickly chime in on.
I want to hear them.
Cardi B, especially now that she's pregnant. Lizzo. Do you know Lizzo? She's an amazing, beautiful rapper. She's gorgeous and emanates just, I mean, I guess like it's funny what you're saying about your own experience through being a sex worker. I have never been a sex worker, so I can't speak to that. But as you were speaking, I was thinking about the Empress as the sex positivity movement. Yeah. Or the Empress as the body positivity movement, the Empress as self-love in any form and having no shame and having endless, boundless love, who you are, how you are, no matter what. You know, I think that it's aspirational. It's aspirational. It's sex positivity, body positivity. RuPaul, for me, for sure, absolutely, is Empress. And one thing I'll just quickly say about RuPaul with sort of this larger Empress provider thing is not just RuPaul as this like gorgeous, beautiful drag queen who's just stunning and just gives us pleasure to kind of be around her vision and her image, but also what she's done for so many other drag queens. Like, you know, basically anyone who's been on RuPaul's show and now has their own career. Mm. So, you know, RuPaul has given birth, in quotes, to hundreds of drag queens who have varying levels of careers as being drag queens, which I think is like something to point out.
That is such a great point, because I feel like the Empress transmits her energy through this boundless joy that just elevates and then disseminates and then like creates more of that.
Like, and provides and what, like, it's always about something greater than just, you know, her pleasure. Just a few others. Big Frida, I'm going to talk about her a little bit later. Dita Von Teese, Kim Kardashian, I would also say is Empress energy.
Totally. Kim Kardashian totally rocks that Empress energy.
Should we talk about some shadow?
We should. I really feel like we should. Shadow version of the Empress. Okay, so if your Empress is like stuck, she's appearing in reverse, you might be having a really hard time accessing that energy, that empress energy. You might feel disempowered, de-eroticized. It might be a fallow period for you. Or where we can easily see where the trouble might lie is she is boundless. She literally has no boundaries, right? She's completely porous. So she just gives and gives and gives. And that giving is unstructured.
Totally. I have a bunch of stuff on this one.
Let's go there.
There we have, of course, the mean mommy. And the mean mommy archetype sort of comes out of giving away too much without having boundaries, growing to resent, and then becoming bitter towards everyone around you that you've just given and given and given. And the basis of it, to me, gets derived from thinking about everyone else before thinking about yourself, and then just being exhausted and then being cruel. So again, if your empress stuff is sort of backed up, mommy issues, like mother issues, having to maybe forgive the person who gave birth to you or helped raise you, whatever gender that was, selfishness, jealousy, healing your relationship with pleasure, with sexuality, with femininity. And then we have ideas, these extractive ideas around femininity that I just want to briefly sort of talk about here in the shadow of the Empress. So lately I've been hooked on the Big Frida reality TV show. I don't know if have you seen it? It's a great show. Well, I think it is. And Big Frida definitely is Empress energy. Big Frida is a bounce artist from New Orleans who is absolutely gorgeous. They have beautiful nails. They have gorgeous wigs and weaves. Their makeup is perfectly done up. And they're an ambassador of bounce, which basically is they are wanting other people to shake their asses wildly in a frenzy for an hour of time. You can't not go to one of these shows and just feel like, you know, some sort of ecstaticness or wildness, right? So in that's to me, that's also very Empress energy. It's like wanting everyone to feel joy. But on the show, as you sort of watch it, you find out that like Frida herself is giving and giving and giving, but those closest to her, like managers or intimate partners, are extracting, are just taking, 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 and not really seeing her fully, like through and through, and not seeing or not asking about her needs or what she would maybe want. And I think that happens a lot with the feminine or feminine archetypes. If you're giving, if you're a provider, we're not often sort of pausing and saying like, hey, what do you need? Hey, Moon. Hey, Mother Moon. Like, what do you need from me? Mother Moon, I'm just going to take your power. You know, hey, Earth, I'm just going to take your herbs. I'm just going to use them for whatever I need. I'm not going to ask you what you need. I'm not going to cultivate a sort of interactive, collaborative relationship with you.
Such a great point, because, you know, we think of the Empress as nature. And so some of that shadow side could also be like, when we go into nature, we're like, oh my God, nature, I love you. Let me just be with you. Let me celebrate you. Let me take these herbs off you. Let me take these minerals out of you. Let me take the fish out of your ocean. You're doing such a great job. Can I have more? It's kind of like the giving tree. Remember that story from when you were a kid? Like, the giving tree is the Empress, and the boy just keeps coming back for more and more and more until there's nothing. So that lack of boundaries and like not being able to say no is a major element.
Also, like just really thinking about you in your relationships, whether it be to yourself or to those around you, are you extracting or are you overly giving too much? I talked a bit about this card could be about healing codependence. And to me, that's like, are you valuing yourself based on how much you give to other people or how valuable you are to them, right? When the Empress is fully upright, fully aligned in her own power, she is beingness of love, of connection, of generation.
But she has the ability to regenerate because she takes that time
care of herself.
There's a lot of self-care. I also think too about the creative process, and this can lead us into our next show eventually, which is the Emperor. The Empress's energy is of constant creation, constant generation. But there could be like a disorganized quality about it, creating too much in every direction. The Empress energy is not thinking about like, okay, now how do I make this scalable? Or, you know, how do I administrate this?
She just wants to make.
She's just making. She just wants to make. So for instance, like if you're an artist and you get the Empress in reverse or something, it might be like you're spending a lot of energy making a lot of things, putting things in a lot of directions, but you're not really getting any traction because you're maybe not applying strategy to how you're making things, or, you know, you're making a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and you're kind of just exploring and just doing it for the pleasure of doing it. But then you might wake up and be like, oh, like, how am I going to make this sustainable? I've been spending all this time doing this, and now, like, the rent person knocking at the door, and what do I do now? Or I feel exhausted now, or I feel tapped out now.
I also see it, like, to that point when it's reversed, if we're talking about creation and artistry, of not making or feeling stuck or not knowing where to begin, you know, those kinds of feelings, or imposter syndrome or something like that.
What right do I have to do this?
Take up space, love myself, share myself, let people see me and be seen as myself, so on and so forth. So we're going to talk about Venus. We're going to talk about symbolism. We're going to get into the meat of the Empress, right, so to speak.
Empress corresponds to Venus.
And Venus and Libra,
right,
which are signs of love and beauty and pleasure.
Yes.
Venus as evening star, I just kind of wanted to point out that in a way Venus is sister to the moon, the card that comes right before her, the High Priestess, because like the moon, Venus actually has phases that we can see. And the as Venus moves, the light changes. So I also want to think about whenever I think of light that moves, cosmic entities, I think of seasons and cycles and passing of time as not being linked to the Gregorian calendar. So it not being linear time, so to speak. So I think about this card, the Empress, as cycles and seasons, seasons of harvest, seasons of giving, seasons of rest, seasons of love, you know, ways of being that aren't necessarily point A to point B.
Sure. And I see, again, so Venus as Eros, right, that connecting force, as opposed to, as we'll discuss next week, Mars, the energy that distinguishes itself, that pulls itself away, that individuates. Instead, the energy of Venus draws things towards you, right? She entices. Mars accomplishes by force of will, whereas Venus seduces.
Well, and we see that with the traditional depictions of the Empress in the visual of this card. When you look at her, she's leaning back. She's not stressed out. She's not going out after anything. She is a magnet. She herself is like the honeypot. She's drawing energy to her by the love and the vibration that she's emanating.
Absolutely. So, you know, in living beings, action takes place as a result of either desire or force. And Venus is the energy of desire. So Mars is force, is individual, but Venus is relational. So as things move in nature, they want to do what they're doing, right? Like the beavers want to build the dams, you know, the ants and the bees want to collect the honey. It's not like, oh, I've got to go to work.
Exactly.
It's like they're doing it out of a sense of desire to do it. So also, Venus is associated with big cats like leopards, which we see in many versions of the Empress card, and sea mammals like dolphins and whales. Also, the cow and the bull with her association with Taurus, which in many cultures is related to fertility and wealth because the cow provides milk. Cows in many cultures are like seen as actual money. And then motherhood, of course, because, you know, the cows provide milk.
The Empress is number three. And I don't know about you, Amanda, but for me, three is my favorite number. It's a magic number for me. It is like the number of magic. It's the number of creation. It's the number of manifestation. It's the number of making things happen. When we have three legs, we have a stool. When we have three points, we have an arrow. It's sort of this way that we direct energy up and out. Time and time again, it shows up. We have the three fates. We have the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Three goes beyond the binary, my favorite thing to think about. You know, we also have 13, you know, 1, 3, you know, as being the number of moon cycles in the year and as being a number of the goddess as well.
By the power of 3 times 3, our spell is cast and shall be.
Absolutely. So you wanted to say another three sacred.
Oh, yeah. So three is sacred to the goddess, you know, with the mother, the maiden, the crone. The number one, a thing appears from nothing. The number two, the thing sees itself, recognizes separation from the other. But with three, those two polarities of the one and the two combine to create this third thing. So she's conception and she's birth.
Some of the images that are on her, again, in the traditional deck, although I love how you brought up the mother piece because that's such an amazing rendition of that card. Traditionally, she has her Venus symbol hanging out with her. Traditionally, she appears to be pregnant. She's in some kind of beautiful muumuu, right? She has a crown of stars on her head, and she's out in nature. She also really resonates with the Three of Cups and the Nine of Pentacles, sort of have that kind of empress energy sort of spinning outwards as well.
Yeah.
Are there any other symbols that pop out at you with visually with this card?
Well, she has the bull, but she also has wheat, right?
Yes.
So I see the wheat as the Demeter aspect.
You
know, if the high priestess is Persephone, then the empress is Demeter. But she's Demeter before Persephone is abducted, right? She's not sad. She hasn't had anything taken away from her. And again, in the charge of the star goddess, it says, I who am the beauty of the green earth and the white moon among the stars and the mystery of the waters and the heart's desire, call unto your soul, arise and come unto me, for I am the soul of nature who gives life to the universe, said Beyonce. Anyway. So what does it mean when you get the Empress in a reading? What do you tell your clients?
Create, create, create. Don't wait. Go out into nature. Question your self-love and your self-nurturing processes. And it really is creation, co-creation, collaboration time.
Yeah, agreed. Nature, that's key. Nature's so healing. Working with the Empress, it's a really good time to cultivate plants, to pay attention to natural rhythms and cycles. In her Taurian aspect, the Empress is simplicity and calm. So she's a great antidote to anxiety because she's physical. She's that domestic goddess, right? She bakes, she gardens, she sews, she makes music, she makes love. She returns to her body. So when you get the Empress in a reading, often it's indicating that this is a time of great fertility for you. This is a time, you know, to devote to love and attraction. Your juice, you know, your erotic power is running high. It's a good time to conceive of a project. And you're really being directed to amplify your creative energy and to trust it and to be shameless about it and to just give it to the world as your gift.
I really think a lot too about this card, just about the topic of love and self-love. Most importantly, and thinking about how much love you're giving to yourself, thinking about what impulses that you're creating in your life and how are they born out of love or fear? Are they born out of self-love? There are sayings that, you know, if you don't love yourself first, you can't love others. I actually don't think that's true necessarily, but there is a deepening, a steadfastness to the self-love process that I think when the Empress comes in, she's really this balm that's like, you're good enough, you're smart enough. So get it together and just start loving yourself more.
And enjoy your life. Go out in the sun. Go listen to music. Connect with the people that you love. Make something. Even if you don't have a lot of money, take a little bit of time to like make something delicious out of beans and rice instead of just eating the fastest, not good thing. You know, but like really taking time to make something, do something nourishing and delicious and fructifying. And she's also saying that that presence is in your life. You have access to that. You know, it's always a really positive sign unless you're getting her in kind of a negative aspect or if she's reversed and the indication is that she's blocked. I always, just to sort of give some magical tips here, you know, everybody wants to see the Empress because everybody wants love. I'm just going to be comfortable saying, like, putting words in everybody's mouth there, right? But when you get the Empress, is a great time to invite love into your life, self-love included, and creative, generative processes. So I always have people put the Empress on their altar if they're looking to call in love, to get pregnant, or to create a new project. So altar work with the Empress is essential. Once you put her on your altar and you start collecting other objects that belong there, like pearls, flowers, wine, fruit, sexy pictures, lingams, you know, wheat, you have to ask yourself, you want to call in love? You want to call in fertility? You have to ask yourself, do I belong on this altar? Because if you don't, if you take a look in the mirror at yourself and you're like, I do not belong on this altar. I have not been giving it my juicy best, right? And this is nothing to do with, are you beautiful enough in a classical sense? No, I'm shame. Saying yeah. Like, are you embodying the spirit of the Empress? And if not, how can you bring some of that energy that you're cultivating on your altar into your daily life and practice? And that's for you. You get to negotiate that.
She's really comfortable with taking up space. You know, she's stretched out. She's comfortable with having people view her. She's comfortable with opening up. For me, I think a lot when she comes up in my life, or I want to embody her or invoke her. Because again, to your point, why wouldn't you want to invoke this lifeness, this life force? I think about infusing every aspect of my life with this idea. So, you know, whether I'm doing the dishes, or a lot of times I'll get stressed out about projects or things to do. And for me, looking at it from an Empress point of view. So instead of rewarding myself after I finish the chapter, I start with taking the bath. I start with massaging myself. I start with making myself my favorite tea and cleaning my room. Then I sit down to write, and I write for myself. I write for enjoyment's sake. I write to stretch my brain. I write to make myself laugh. I write to try to think of new words to come in. You know, that's sort of what I think of as driving me when I'm invoking the Empress.
Ooh, can I just add on that?
Mm-hmm.
Because I love that. So for instance, instead of like hot, like you're like, oh, I need to clean my house. So you're like racing to like scrub the dishes and like sweep up the floor. But what if you were to shift that energy into some Empress energy, and you're like, I'm going to put on some music. Mm-hmm. I'm going to burn some incense. I'm going to put a few drops of essential oil in that dishwater, and I'm just going to enjoy this. I'm going to look at the light. I'm going to notice all the beautiful things that are going on here and make that into a juicy experience, instead of racing through and just trying to get on to the next thing. Similarly to like how you're dressing. Are you just throwing on your sweatpants and like putting your hair in a ponytail and like racing out the door? Are you like, called I'm going to be in my boudoir. I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to put on the sexy soft fabrics. And
the emphasis on that, the emphasis on, you know, combing your hair and putting on a matching pair of socks and wearing silky, beautiful clothing isn't for anyone else.
No.
It's for yourself.
It's for her. It's a commune with her.
There's a great power in showing the world what love and pleasure looks like and feels like, period.
You're becoming a priestess of the Empress. How do you want to show up in her temple? Is she going to be pleased with the way that you're showing up in her temple? Just think about that.
Feeling a little called out, Amanda.
I do not know how you can ever
gonna have to go brush my hair.
Oh my God, she's in like this cutest, sexiest, like flapper dress, like sheer dress with like tassels and bright red lipstick and these beautiful disc earrings. So, and I'm like a slovenly, uncombed, whatever. Carolyn's shaking her finger and being like, don't be self-deprecating.
Yeah, you're
we
a goddess
already.
You're a goddess. Just anyway, hashtag deal with it.
Hashtag
okay?
Deal with it. I'm
talk about a time in your life when the Empress claimed you.
Oh yeah. So, you know, when I was younger, as I was speaking to earlier, you know, that I was in the sex industry, and then I feel like I was really claimed by the High Priestess or Persephone. And then as I started to become the Oracle of Los Angeles in my early 30s, then the Empress really did claim me. Like, I needed to have beauty around me constantly. Like, I changed the way that I looked, that I dressed. Like, it wasn't just about getting the job done as fast as possible and not having to think about it. I really shifted into, like, do I love this fabric? Do I love to have it against my skin? Like, you know, listening to music a lot more. Like, when I started to really claim my power as a fully grown woman who had something to offer the world through the wisdom that I'd gained through working with Persephone, right? The travel into the underworld. You know, I learned so much from that experience. And then when I really came to being at peace with it was when I felt like I was sort of claimed by Venus, and, you know, my whole relationship to the world changed, and the world's relationship to me changed too. It really opened up for me. Relationships became a lot easier. Money started coming a lot easier. I didn't have to work so hard for things because I felt like, you know, the thing is about the Empress or any archetype, any deity, is if you call them, they come. If you call the Empress, she comes to you. You put her on the altar and you say, I want you, come to me. She will come to you. You just have to show up and do the things, like, let her energy come through. But that's why altars are really important. If you don't have an altar, then there's no space for spirit to enter. Like, it's in your mind, but there's no space for spirit to enter. The altar is the threshold for deity to enter into your life. So you need to have one.
Well, and to that point, an altar can be anything. An altar can be a little nice gathering of meaningful objects near your bedside mirror. An altar can be next to your kitchen sink by the window. An altar can kind of be anything. But I think what's important, particularly about Venus, is that she loves the tangible. So offerings of honey, flowers, shells, honey calcite, you know, I think about lipstick because I like to wear lipstick. She also correlates with Friday, the day of the goddess. Mm-hmm. So if you want to, you know, if you're listening to this and it's coming up on a Friday, you just want to clean out your altar space, make a little place for Venus, fill it with some beautiful things that you feel imbues her spirit, make it a creative process, not a have to. Follow that and invoke the goddess into your life.
And she will come. Hail Venus.
Stay tuned, and you can find us
at Oracle of LA, Facebook, Instagram,
or GOTTESSS on Instagram, or visualmagic.info. Thanks so much for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thanks so much for listening. Bye.
We love you, witches. Thanks so much for listening. We feel so excited and grateful that you're all here with us. And this is just a little reminder that if you've really enjoyed listening to our show, just tap that 5-star review on iTunes. It helps more people find us, and it is a really nice good deed, and it takes about 10 seconds to do. We thank you in advance.
Witches in the pumpkin patch, witches after dark, witches in the pillow fort, there's a witch wherever you are.